Audio hosting for Comics Are Great is provided by Kablam, KABLAM.com, the one-stop printing solution for independent comics publishers. This time on the show,
we discuss why I think the Nib is noisy,
why John Henry was a brush-using man,
and why aren't we prepared? Eli is. All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's a great visual storytelling show recorded live every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the corner of 5th and William. I am Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist, and have we got a fun episode of the show for you today, because I got two of the kings of the industry, two shining stars in the comics firmament, and they're looking around looking for who I'm talking about.
I can't wait to meet them.
Yeah, I'm excited. Who are we going to meet?
Heroes, true heroes of this medium. Wow. We have Joe Fu of Desmond's Comic and Mike Roll of Apuka. I got the Earl for Apuka right here, don't I? Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so yeah, mikeroll.blogspot.com and apuka.blogspot.com is where you can find out more about Apuka. We'll start with you, Mike. So Apuka is the world's most adorable zombie, yes?
Yes.
You have the book right there. You want to show us what it
looks
like?
Sure, yeah, this is a...
There we go. And so what's the deal with Apuka, this comic that you draw?
Well, she's the world's most adorable zombie. The title kind of speaks for itself. She's just a happy little girl that likes to play with animals and make new friends.
This is Apuka. She is a zombie.
And occasionally she'll just get hungry and, well, she needs to eat, so.
She eats.
That's where the human brain factor comes
in. Oh, human brain. So it's not sort of like Green Thing where it's like the whole person.
No.
Okay. No. So it's just the brains. Is she a running fast zombie or a slow lumbering zombie?
She's a running fast. She's fresh. She's not,
fresh. That's the way to
not
go.
Very decomposed.
Is it the old what is it, like the scientific umbrella experiment gone awry, or is it the, undead curse zombie?
We're not sure yet. We haven't gotten that far.
That'll be
with
the
it.
Apuka 80-page giant special.
Yeah, it will be, yes, yeah.
But yeah, so, okay, so this, like, has, like, kind of like a children's book vibe, but with, like, the twist of zombies.
Yes.
And has, like, kind of like a watercolor, like, limited palette, H.A. Ray kind of look to it, yeah?
Thanks. Yeah. we were inspired by old children's books and the single or two color kind of thing, and that's just sort of where we went with it.
So cool. Okay, so that's your work introducing you to that. We'll get to the introductions fast because I want to get to like talking about inking with you guys, because you guys are both the reason I was talking about you guys like so speaking so highly is that you guys both do the courageous thing of inking with the brush, right?
Yep. That's yep.
Oh, why would you do that to yourselves?
Well, that's the only way to do it.
I don't know.
I don't know how else
I
to
like
do it.
I like ProQuil, too.
Oh, ProQuil just scratches.
Somebody told me if I jumped off that cliff that it would be a lot of fun, so I went.
The brush?
Yes.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. First, we got to introduce Joe Fu, who was recently at the Ann Arbor District Library.
I was.
Doing a presentation for the Ann Arbor Comics Artist Forum. Thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you for having me, and it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of people show up. I met a lot of new friends, and I made a few enemies too. I don't know. There's some jerk in the back that kept coughing and hacking up throughout my whole
some guy
presentation.
Didn't know well enough to stay home when he was sick.
He coughed up a lung at one point, and this kid picked it up. It's like, what is this? It's like, oh, that's Jersey's lung. Give it back.
To him. Yeah, I'll sign it.
you can hold it forever.
I think it's on eBay right now.
So, you were talking a lot about character design at your presentation, mm-hmm. Using your own comic, Desmond's Comic, mm-hmm. as a basis of meditation.
That's desmondscomic.com.
Yes, desmondscomic.com. Your Joe Fu 22 on the Twitters.
On the Twitters. If you follow the Twitters, I do the Joe Fu 22.
And, I should have said Mike Roll on Twitter. I only found out today that Mike Roll was on Twitter. I searched for him, like, yesterday, trying to find his handle. And you know how many Mike Rolls are on Twitter?
I have no idea.
A lot. So
it's a household name.
But, so now I'm finally following you. But Mike Roll on Twitter, Joe Fu 22. You also teach at the College for Creative Studies.
Yes, I teach a lot of somewhat whiny freshmen in college.
Oh, nice.
I teach basic perspective. Hopefully someone's watching me. If Casey Wise, if you're out there and you tuned in, you figured out how to work that computer. Hey, how you doing? Thanks for tuning in, Casey. Anyone else tuning in? Thanks for signing up.
So, yeah, what do you teach there?
I teach basic perspective, which is, people think of perspective and they get all freaked out because it seems like such a complicated thing. And really, all I'm teaching is how to draw a room, how to draw an environment. And as I said in my talk on Sunday, a character is just about everything, not only the people involved in the story, but the environment as well. Environment becomes a very important component into your character, and your characters react off your environment as much as your environment reacts off your characters. So,
and what types of lines you choose and what kinds of viewing angles you choose kind
absolutely.
Of reveals a lot about
absolutely.
Your environment, right?
If you're telling the story from a child's perspective, you're going to go pretty low with your perspective, which means your eye level is going to drop to about 2 feet, 3 feet, where the eye level of a child is. So when you look at a room, it's going to be ginormous. It's going to be huge. As opposed to, like in class, I'll say someone who's an angel, someone who's kind of omnipotent looking down at a scene, you have more of a powerful view on the world if you're looking down on it. And it just makes you seem bigger than life. So the whole aspect of perspective really helps you tell your story.
I also think about that movie Paranormal Activity,
mm-hmm.
where it was the found footage from the security cams,
mm-hmm.
and you needed that angle in order to mm-hmm. sort of tell the story that way, right?
And the brilliance mm-hmm. of using that angle, too, is there's a helpless feeling, a sense that because you're tuning in, you're looking in through a camera, so you can't actually run in there and save these people.
Right.
You're limited in your ability, which makes it more scary because you're vulnerable to what's going to happen on screen.
Right. You're a helpless viewer in
yes.
that situation.
Yep.
And you're not in the scene.
Yes.
You're just watching passively as somebody gets terrible things happening to them,
mm-hmm.
at
mm-hmm.
least in Paranormal Activity. Okay, well, cool. Well, that's our first big thought of the day is that environments can be characters,
yes.
right?
Yes.
But, you know, have you heard about that Manga Studio Pro with the perspective tool built into it?
A lot of programs like Illustrator, Adobe Illustrator, now has that tool too. That you could just program your coordinates and it'll build up a grid and pull up blocks and stuff like that.
Is this an Illustrator 5, CS5?
Sure. I don't know. I'm still on 3, so it might
but
be.
But it's in 3?
It's not in 3.
Okay.
At least. What are they on now? 5?
Yeah,
it's probably
I
on
just
5.
Got 5, so
yeah,
I'm gonna go home now and check it out.
You should be able to just program and it'll build a grid, a whole environment, and you can pull up blocks to represent your objects. The problem I have with that, I'm an old school guy, and I start from the beginning. I build my grid up by hand.
Yeah.
And the reason I do that is I want the feel of the whole scene going into it. I don't want like a computer to do my job and then me try to figure out what the computer did. I want to jump in and have total control of it. And I don't know. I guess I'm a purist when it comes to art. But
well, this is where I was going with this line of inquiry is that, okay, you guys ink with a brush.
Mm-hmm.
You map out your perspective by hand. Mm-hmm. You're doing two things that you just don't need to do anymore. Because
well.
That, with digital technology, you can take your pencils, scan them. Hey, I can use levels. I can use threshold. And bam, my art is print ready. I don't need to ink it.
I don't know. Then you lose the idea of a really nice brush line work, which I think is like you're saying now, it's a dying art form. We're losing it. And I think people skip that because they don't think it's necessary. And we're losing that art form, which is a sad thing. And the same thing, it's like the computer is making us more obsolete. It's like, who wants to be an artist when you could just like type in some numbers on a computer and have the computer do all the artwork for you? And it's so then it gets to a point where it's like everyone starts looking the same. Everyone doesn't have their own voice. Everyone looks like Illustrator or any other program out there. So,
but it's just a tool. It's just all how you use it, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Until that day comes and Skynet takes over and we're all and then we all die.
This moment of paranoia was brought to you by DesmondsComic.com.
All one word, no apostrophe, no space. I do actually. Cheap plug. I do have a Skynet moment in Desmond's comic. If you check it out, you can see the Skynet moment.
Well, I want to go at this a little bit deeper. One of the things that I've kind of proposed about inking is a guy who does, I do, you know, hand inks, even though I do use the computer extensively for a lot of my work. As a matter of fact, I didn't bring my book. The first page of one of my graphic novels.
Unprepared. General theme going on here today. Not being prepared.
Comics are great.
This guy out back named Matt. He's sidebar. Knocking stuff over. I walked around the basement of this place for like 20 minutes. Like the security guard said, just go down this elevator and follow this non-existent yellow line. And then I'm in like Mike said, I think I'm in where they stored the lost ark in Indiana Jones movie. It was like all these crates.
Did you see the chest down there? Because that's another feature.
Is that what was moving at me?
Wow.
Okay, now I'm totally creeped out. I'm not going back that way.
The underside of Ann Arbor. You thought this place was great.
You guys are
fired. It's all a facade. It's all a facade.
It's a wonderful, wonderful place. Where was I going with this? Oh.
where are you going with this? That's a good question.
I was saying that my work incorporates a lot of digital elements because the first page of one of my graphic novels starts with a Ferris wheel in three-point perspective, and I used a CAD program to do it because have you ever tried drawing a Ferris wheel in three-point perspective?
I have.
I tried once.
Did you succeed?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Thank
you very much.
Well, we'll have an arm wrestling match after this.
Oh, yeah. I'll take you on. I'll do it.
Anyway, I couldn't do it, so I finally resorted to CAD. But I inked by hand. I printed out in blue line, and I inked it by hand in order to give it that organic feel, because it's my suspicion that, yeah, inks aren't necessary anymore for printing, but doesn't that make them even more of an art form? Because now they're pure expression, right? They started out as a necessity for the printing technology of the 1930s, 1920s, or whatever, but today, since they're no longer needed, that means that every time you use an ink brush, you're adding an extra layer of expression onto to the work, right? Because one of the things you talked about, even during your character design presentation, was the evolution of Desmond's design as a character and how using different kinds of lines give you different kinds of feelings. I don't know if you could go back to that.
Well, when I started Desmond... I was in that boat too, where it's like I have to do a web comic. I want to produce this comic as easily as possible and be able to reproduce this comic as easily as possible for books and whatnot. So the original idea for Desmond was to do it all in Vector, all in Illustrator, and it took so long. But it was the best reproduction I could get because you could size Vector lines at any size, even to a billboard, and it'd still be accurate, still be exact. So. I also found that as I did Vector, I started losing a lot of motion, a lot of expression, just a lot of action in the character, and it stiffened me up. And when I went back to the brush, suddenly I was able to move around. I was able to move my arm around and let that brush do a lot of work for me. And when I started doing that, I saw my character suddenly take a whole new life and become a lot more active and a lot more... able to express themselves the way I wanted them to, as opposed to like, do you think people will understand that Desmond's kind of mad or that Jerry's kind of evil or that anything like that? And the brush really helped me help these characters express themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's all about motion. It's all about translation of expression and to let the characters be the characters.
And part of the motion that you're talking about, I would assume, has partially to do with shape, but also partially to do with emphasizing weight and shadow.
Yes, absolutely.
Like Mike, you do this a lot with the Puka, is that you'll use just ink lines on one side and let the color do the rest of the work, so your ink lines are sort of serving as like a cue for like shadow. Was that an intentional thing, or is that something you just discovered through using the brush?
It was just something that kind of fell into play, like, I started inking and it kind of worked out that way. And then I've been told that I'm kind of like an abstract artist. So I was kind of like, well, okay, maybe that's part of that or whatever. But.
A lot of what we do is just kind of goofing around too, right? It's like, you don't sit down like, well, this is what I'm going to experiment with. And this is the objective and this is what the result will be. Check a box and fill out a chart, right?
One of the best things to do as an artist is to make mistakes, because sometimes, you know, like Bob Ross always says, they're happy mistakes. Sometimes you do something that you completely don't intend to do and it's like the greatest thing ever. And then you can just go to bed afterwards.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time.
But yeah, actually, happy accidents is another thing that to bring into this, is that when I started inking with the Crow Quill, one of the things that I discovered was I was making certain kinds of errors with my lines, like when I would move the pen sideways by accident instead of dragging it towards me or whatever.
and I got this kind of funny chicken scratch that I just liked.
Mm-hmm.
And so at first I was like, I don't like that. I screwed up, and then I looked at it again a minute later. I was like, oh, actually, you know, so you can discover technique by accident, mm-hmm. which I suspect is harder to do when you have undo.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Control Z.
Yeah.
Because you can just eliminate it the moment it happens,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you put ink on paper, you have to live mm-hmm. with it a little bit. I don't feel like I stand on any side of the line in terms of like which is better, computer or paper. I just think they both have their pros and cons, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It depends on the job.
It depends on who you are as an artist and what you want, what your message is, and mm-hmm. what you're trying to get across. And to take it a next step further, Desmond. And all my comics, I don't hand letter, except for like the onomatopoeia, the explosions and stuff like that. I do that myself. But just the verbiage of them talking, it's all a font that I made for my own handwriting. And if I were to hand letter Desmond, every word would be spelled wrong because I'm an artist, not a writer. So I tend to like finish writing the sentence and realize I spelled like three of the words wrong, or I dropped out a the or something like that. And I know formerly a local artist here, Chris Houghton, who does Reed Gunther comics.
Reed Gunther, he's now emigrated to California.
Yes, and that guy. But I know
he's great. Reed Gunther is a fantastic comic.
It's a very, very
he was just spotlighted in USA Today.
How about that?
Wow, yeah.
What a jerk! So I remember when he was still
a nice
around.
Guy.
Yeah, sure. So. Last time, before he left, he was trying to learn how to hand letter. And he wanted to hand letter all of Reed Gunther. I don't know if that's happening right now, but that's how pure of an artist he is, that he wanted to not only control the art that you see, like the line weight, all that stuff, he wanted to control the lettering as well. And I know locally there's a brilliant artist named Jay Foskett who hand letters for Guy Davis, Guy Davis's Marquise. Comic, and he's a brilliant artist too, but he's also a purist where everything is lettered. He also does his own webcomic called Dead Duck, and that's hand lettered as well by him, and he's a brilliant there's an art form to lettering, and he's a brilliant artist.
It definitely there is an art form to lettering, and also sound effect design. I once did a 2-hour long podcast talking about sound effect design because I think it's one of the most absolutely fascinating aspects of making comics is capturing sound. How do you spell it? What shape of letters do you use?
Uh-huh,
and then
absolutely.
What color is the sound? That's when you start sounding like Bob Ross, right? what color is your throwing sound?
Lavender. No.
Oh, you throw like Niles Crane.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get some nitty-gritty questions, and I actually put out a call. Hey, guess what, everybody? Comics Great has a Google Plus page now. You can find it on the Google Plus. Ooh. Just search on Google, put Plus, Comics Are Great, and you should find the page. It's also linked on the Comics Are Great site if you go to the podcast archives page. So I put out a call on there for questions from people who want to ask two masters of ink of... And then they look around again.
Why are they showing up?
Inking on the page. Some questions that they might have about this. Why do you prefer brush over Croquel? I mean, what advantages does it have over Croquel?
You could take this one.
Well, that's...
Maybe not.
I don't know. I got nothing. No. I love the happy little accidents of brush, and I'm kind of a purist, too. I try to keep everything... together, you know, coherent. Otherwise, it's like, you know, like you talk about the lettering, and if you get like a digital lettering or if you just use like impact or something to do sound effects, it looks kind of funny and it can take you out of it too, you know. But brushes, I don't know, I just love it. I feared it for a while and then I just started playing with it and just found out how much fun it is. And it also feels like it's part, you know, it's more of me too. You know, whether I'm being nervous and laying down a line or I'm just excited and laying down a line or whatever, it's...
It feels more like a natural extension from your hand.
Yeah,
is what you're saying?
It is. It's much, much better. And
you know, one of the reasons that I only recently signed on to brushes. As a matter of fact, a year ago, if you would ask me to ink with a brush, I'd say, no, I need my pain. I will never, ever pick up a brush. And now I love it. But one of the reasons I chose Croquel over it was that with Croquel... I felt like there was more control because you could be slower, and if you lock your wrist and use your whole arm when you ink and just turn the page a lot, you can get like some really graceful looking lines, whereas the brush kind of felt like it was inviting me to move fast because you can't really move slow. At least I had trouble moving slowly with a brush. Or did you guys find it different, your experience different?
Honestly, when I first picked up a brush, it was impossible because I'm so used to holding a pencil. You want to put your hand down. You want to control it with just your wrist.
Right.
And as I went through art school and I learned how to paint, learned how to paint.
You became acquainted with the techniques of painting.
As I tell my class, it took me 32 weeks to become a terrible painter. the one thing that I took home from painting was just knowing how to use the brush and how to control the brush. And the nice thing about having a brush is now you can use your whole, you can turn at the elbow as opposed to turning on the wrist. And it gives you nicer lines and nicer control and just more fluidity. And the reason why I wouldn't use a Croquel is because it makes a weird noise when you put it down. It's like scratching the paper. It's like a chalkboard.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. That scratch means that art is happening. It gives you like this tactile feedback. It gives you a little bit of sensory feedback that, you're putting lines on that paper. You're grinding lines on that paper.
I just trust it. I have a lot of trust for my art, and I just know that it's happening. I don't need the violence of it all. Wow.
Croquel is a metal tip after all.
Yeah, it is. That's
like a serial killer.
Okay, I got some examples of art that I've done.
All right, let's do it.
That showed some.
We're done with the questions. No more phone calls.
Do we have
a caller?
Yeah, first time caller.
Caller line one.
Actually, this is
long time
like
listener.
Long time listener. Yeah, there are jobs available here at the AADL.
Yes, please send in your resume.
B Root on the Google Plus.
What's up, B? B Root, like
just
bud?
Watching the game happen to Bud. Yeah,
that's
very
right.
True.
That
goes back about 10 years.
That's old.
It says I'm familiar with the Wally Wood adage: when in doubt, black it out. But often I find myself terrified of ruining a page by painting a compositional element completely black. If you guys could talk about the thought processes behind blackening something out, that would be pretty radical. I'll tell you what I do is that
What do you do, Jersey?
I don't black out anything on the page.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just.
Where's the fun in that?
Well, see, this is where we're talking about like the purist kind of standpoint. Because here's a technique I picked up recently. Well, recently, as in the last couple of years, is that.
That's recent.
I guess so. Not in internet years though. Recent as far as like being as old as I am. So I pencil nowadays on like 9x14 or something like that.
Okay.
Bristol pencil pretty tight, and then I'll scan this and then I print it out in non-photo blue. And there's a video on my YouTube page showing how to do this in both Adobe Photoshop and Adobe Photoshop Elements. I blow it up and I print it out in pieces on off my inkjet printer, and it has to be cut by 8.5x11, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I print out just the tiers of the page and then ink it at a larger size and then scan it and then reduce it again. So it's the equivalent of working on 11x17 sheet. But when I do this, I don't actually fill in my blacks in case I want to edit them after the fact. So this gives me a little extra bit of latitude. So I'm actually filling in the blacks at the Photoshop level.
Mm-hmm.
What this means is that I have no original art to sell at conventions.
Yes.
I can sell my pencils, but then my pencils even have like little notes like, oh, put something here.
All my original pages are full of notes, too. If you ever see me at a show, it's like just it doesn't look like it should on the screen. But I think all artists kind of do that.
In the old days, I used to ink. This is actually one of my favorite pieces I ever did. Did I line that up right? Two-page cover for...
That's good.
Yeah, wraparound cover for a comic I did called PPV, and I used to spot my blacks, but I've never been good at black spotting, so I wonder if you guys could speak to that.
I think for me, it's more instinctual now, I keep my backgrounds pretty light when I do a lot of spotting black, because it's to balance your panels, it's to balance everything out, and... it's just to help draw the eye around. So sometimes I really need to put it down as I'm doing the artwork to make sure that everything's being drawn the right way. Everyone's eye flow is going in the proper direction.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get too complex with backgrounds, then I could go into the Photoshop and lay it down and look at it and make the determination whether or not to move it or eliminate it or whatever. So I go either way. As far as just laying it down, and usually when I am simpler, when my panels are simpler in design, then that's when I just throw the black out, just black down, so I can see it properly and make sure the characters are popping off the way they should.
Does black spotting sort of like create a weight to the overall composition of the page for you guys?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. So yeah. Like, so wherever you're anchoring your black is like sort of like, well, that's like, think of it as like a gravity well for the eye,
mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and leverage those to create a composition. Mm-hmm. And there's that old thing called the squint test, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. My wife Anne is way better at it than me, and it really ticks me off. You know, it sucks being married to somebody who's also a cartoonist sometimes, because when they do mm-hmm. something better than you, you know, it's like. Anyway, yeah, like we were working on a comic together, and she was like, "Your black spots suck," and I'm like, "What are you talking about? I've been doing this longer than you." And she's like, "No," and she like takes a brush and she just goes blah blah blah, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's way better." But and I just forget to squint test sometimes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there are a lot of tricks you could do. The reason why you're squinting is you're taking all the detail out. You're not letting the detail. Overwhelm you and dictate where your black spots go. Mm-hmm. And other tricks you could do are like hold it up in a mirror, hold it upside down, different things like
the
that.
Mirror so test, that's a good one.
So really you don't start recognizing objects as objects. You see them as shapes. And then when you see shapes, you could usually determine the weight of it all and where the black should properly go.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, if you're uncertain about what you're going to do when you go into it, is just scan it in or get a copy of it and shrink it down so you can't really recognize a lot of the detail, and just take a pencil and throw in some shading, a simple, I can't think of the word, study, a simple... Yeah.
thumbnail? Like
not a thumbnail. It's like a value study.
That's oh, there we go. Study. Hey, value. From the art teacher, everybody.
Yes. That's what I do. If you do a simple value study that doesn't take you more than, and really not more than like a couple minutes per page or per panel, and you'll see, and keep it simple, you'll see exactly how the blacks work and how the page balances out and if it looks right. And just instinctually, artists have that knowledge of knowing if it looks right or if it doesn't. And mm-hmm. if you just like wipe your mind clean of everything that you think you know, your mind will tell you what you actually do know.
Oh, it's like the movie Willow.
A little bit.
Forget all you know or think you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Taking it back again.
Wow.
Is that bad that I can quote that movie? I still think it's a great movie. General Kale is one of the greatest villains of all time. All he does is shout. That's all you need from a villain.
There you go, guys. Yeah. The key to making comics, have a villain that shouts.
Just Shakespearean fish shaking. Okay, so I got inking questions to ask you guys in terms of what ink do you use. I got some Higgins Black Magic here. Is that bad?
That's good.
That's very
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Okay, some people are really persnickety about it. You know, like, oh, it's all Speedball, super black all the way, you know. Uh-huh. I need a deeper viscosity or thicker viscosity. I only use Pelican and I mix it by hand, you know.
No, that works really well. An artist named Michael Cho turned me on to that, and I went out and bought a ton of it, and been using it since, and it's very good.
So this is good with a brush?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this leads me to a question from Renee Van Belsen, who asked on
Google
Plus.
Thank you for asking the question.
He said, how does evaporating water from the ink influence the inking? Should you even do it? Should you leave the cap off, let it get a little thicker sometimes? And how can you make, do you have any tips or tricks on how to make the ink more consistent overall? You know, like dealing with evaporation and when it starts getting low in the tank. And
I would always put a cap on your bottle of ink because I spill all the time. And I clean my brush off. And other than that, I don't know. Honestly, as far as ink goes, I use it straight out of the bottle, and I don't do anything to it. And usually, if it doesn't sit that long, if it's a freshly out of the bottle, usually I find it and have an easier time to work with it.
Do you
ever
have any
else?
Problems with this Black Magic stuff smelling bad after a couple months? Because I've had that happen. Like, I'll have a bottle that I'll forget about. It'll be deep in my art
I don't
cabinet.
Know what you've been doing with your inks, Jersey. But
wow. No,
it'll smell like rotten
gross.
Eggs sometimes. Like,
ew.
Like, yeah.
True confessions from Jersey. Yikes.
You've not noticed that?
Oh. No.
Oh, you go through your ink too fast.
No, I do burn it up pretty quickly.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but this was like a bottle that it was like behind something on my art cabinet. And so I was like, oh, well, there's a half full bottle there. And I opened it up and pew. So
it was just being sad that you didn't use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's letting you know.
Very upset.
So you guys want to do some inking? I brought art tools.
Wait, is that
today.
The smelly ink though?
No, this is the good.
Oh, okay.
Is
it going to stink up the joint? Oh boy.
We're all going to pass out.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I keep a can of fart spray. You remember that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I put on my art tools so nobody will take them. I did want to give a plug because I brought my tools and my cool pencil caddy that I got from dangargyle.com. She makes awesome, awesome custom pencil cases. And,
nice.
Yeah, she's got an Etsy shop, too. What's her Etsy shop? Well, it's actually more than one. It's Etsy.com/shop. /dangargyle.
Dang.
Yeah, look at this cool Transformers
case. Very cool.
So, yeah, I'm going to get another one made.
And that's a someone nice. Newer out there.
I love how you guys are doing the the Barker's Beauty thing for me. All you got to do is like put your hands around it for me a little bit. Oh, look at that. Whoa. So pick your weapons, gentlemen.
I'll let you, you go first.
Who want,
oh,
I got, some.
Okay.
Oh, these are.
What kind of brushes?
Blick Finest Red Sable.
Sable is the way to go. If you're going the brush route, it'll give you a nice point, a nice tip when you draw.
I also got some Pentel Color brush pens. Or are these no good?
Pentels are great. There's a whole set of brush pens. And if you're looking to go the brush pen route, a website that's really good to look at is jetpens.com. And you can get a lot of different varieties of brush pens to play around with. And the key, like a lot of artists have actually told me, the key to brush is almost like a spiritual thing where you let the brush find you. You walk into the store and the brush finds you.
Wow.
So, sables are probably about anywhere from $10 to $14 a piece. And you go, if one's not working out for you, don't be afraid to throw away that brush because they're all made differently. Like, you can't make all brushes the same.
So, can you demo this while he's talking about this, Mike?
Yeah, do some work here, buddy.
Show us what it looks like, how you hold the brush and,
going to drop this on here because I don't have any.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, lack of preparation.
Whoa, you actually put the ink on the paper like that?
I'm doing it right now.
This is not typical.
This is
lack of preparation. We need a bowl here. We need something.
Yeah. To put ink in a bowl.
We need something.
Yeah, we use a plastic bowl or.
Oh,
or
see, I dip it right in the inkwell.
So I don't know. I'm just gonna noodle out in a puka, I think.
So it should also be noted that you are left-handed.
Yep.
Which is working out for this show.
We had to. We had to move the cameras. Lack of preparation.
Yep, there you go. Not looking good for the Ann Arbor Library District.
Oh, stop it. What other library is putting on a comics podcast every week? Hello.
Well, let me look it up.
I assure you, none. So, though they should, as I would say that all libraries, Detroit Public Library, Canton, what would be close to you guys, Southfield?
Royal Oak, Southfield, Berkeley.
Hey, if you're watching, follow my lead.
Hey, do something.
You could have Joe on every week.
I was trying to get in your shot, but I think it's on Mike watching
Mike Inc. Wow, so you're not? Are you intentionally not turning the paper around for the camera right now? Or is this actually how you will hold the brush and work around the page?
I'll do this sometimes and. Sometimes I just zone out, and this is what happens.
Sometimes you just got to make it up as you go.
Yeah.
If you think too hard, and then
I don't know if I should rotate it too, because
that wrong side of your brain's going to tell you, nope, this is an eyeball, and this is the shape of an eyeball. Where if you let that art side take over, then it just kind of happens, and it's kind of like what Steve Jobs said: your heart knows exactly what you want to do. Sure, don't let your brain interrupt it.
So are you intentionally working with the different opacities of the ink to create that kind of effect? Like you are...
Yeah, I try to throw in my shadows and that. And this is a little bit lighter. This is interesting paper. It seems kind of waxy.
Oh, this is, I should say, this is Utrecht House Brand Bristol, which is a type of Bristol I've discovered is really great for running through inkjet printers.
Yeah.
If you get the Strathmore 300 series, sometimes it'll jam. In inkjet.
Ooh, really?
This stuff is a little bit on the thinner side. It has a bit of a smoother tooth to it. And it doesn't take brush ink as well as the Strathmore 300
series.
Yeah,
it's not quite soaking it, but still, it's I do some post-production work in the computer and could adjust it.
So people in the chat are cheering on the fact that we're doing an art demo on the show. So I want to say for the folks who are listening to the audio podcast after the fact, you should check out the videos at youtube.com/comicsaregreat to see not only to see these cartoonist faces because that's one of the bad things about being a cartoonist, isn't it? Is that you get to be famous but not really famous?
Well, for some of us, it's fortunate that no one's.
Well,
no
that's
one's
true. If you're infamous, like El Guapo over here.
El Guapo.
The only cartoonist I've ever seen in public that has ever been spotted was when I lived in Arizona, and I lived not too far from Todd McFarlane, so I always sort of bumped into him at local haunts.
Were you stalking Todd McFarlane?
No, it's just like all of a sudden I'd hear like this weird voice like, oh, hey, can I find a cup of coffee? And I was like, hey, that's Todd McFarlane.
I always forget about that part, that he's
Wanda wants a cup of coffee. Oh my God, I can't believe I just did that on the air. But anyway, so yeah, but the people would spot him. But I mean, that's Todd McFarlane. He's the guy who bought those baseballs, right? So
yeah, that's right.
I was thinking about that the other day. It's like Todd McFarlane. He did some comics. Oh yeah, he was in the news for buying a really expensive baseball.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so interesting that you are.
I'm just kind of. I don't know what I'm doing now.
Well, and you have a looser style, too. I mean, I want to see how Joe does it, because Joe has a much tighter style than you do. But, I mean, this is one thing that the brush can do that the crow quill cannot do, is do this kind of loose, expressive kind of look, right?
Absolutely, and I think Mike also utilizes a lot of dry brush techniques, which you can't do in crow quill. What he does is create texture with his line, and texture is something that I think is lost, especially in the digital age, where textures are either pre-programmed and kind of canned, or it's like perfectly tight and streamlined and so clean that it looks kind of dull. I think texture adds a lot of personality and a lot of activity.
What's interesting is we're seeing as mainstream comics move more and more to an open contour style to accommodate all the things that color can do, like digital color. Mm-hmm. We're seeing more and more indie people really embracing brush mm-hmm. pen and like mm-hmm. the expressive stuff that you can do on paper with mm-hmm. Analog tools. You look at something like Craig Thompson.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Now I'm coming up blank. But anyway, lots of people in the indie scene.
Yeah, there you go.
Go to your local Comic-Con and go to the artist alley, or go to actually like an SPX or a Mocha.
Mocha,
or
Stump, if you're out on the West Coast.
Space.
Space
who is a good one
around
if you're
here
in the Midwest.
I think there's one called Mix in Minneapolis
that
now.
That one just happened, yep. That was a successful show from all reports.
There.
So very cool. Awesome. You get to sign this so we can eBay it later.
Okay.
As made on.
Should I make it out to eBay? I love that Futurama. It's so funny.
What I could do is I could just use it as a giveaway on comicsaregreat.com.
There we go.
For everybody who gives
hang on, I should do something with this. This is a dark ink cloud or something.
She's only happy when it rains.
Oh.
It's a zombie thing.
So, okay. So, Joe, you're up.
Am I up?
Yeah, because we only got 5 minutes before our AADL guest gets here. Pick your brush.
5 minutes. Pressure.
I know, it goes so fast. This fun stuff goes so fast.
Am I sitting over where Mike is now? We're doing a little musical.
Guys are gonna, I'm going to move the camera.
The producer Matt Dubay is going to move the camera on the fly to get a good shot.
Do you have a pencil I can use? Because I cannot just kind of make it up.
If you must. Well, actually, that would be actually good to see what kind of penciling style you use.
I'm good. I'm just going to
move the paper where you want it.
This is good right here. I'm just going to do it, okay? I'm just going to do it.
Just dive in. Just do it, man. Just do it. Just go with it. Just go with it.
So one thing that I know that I try to keep in mind is you want to keep your pencils pretty loose. Well, what I want to do is keep my pencils pretty loose because I don't want to lose that energy and excitement when I ink it in and I translate the ink. There might be a lot of nonsense that I say because I'm that other brain.
What kind of pencils do you guys use? You guys use graphite or you use blue or
whatever I happen to have on me at the time.
Really? So like just like Ticonderoga sitting on the desk.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that is loose. It looks like a bunch of scribbles. You know, I did an episode of the show. What was it? Episode or two ago. I had a panel of teen cartoonists on. And one of the 9-year-old girl, I asked her what it takes to be a cartoonist, and she said, just scribble around till it looks like something.
There you go.
And I was like, you know, like that's that brilliant Yoda kind of wisdom from the mind of a child. And that's what loose pencils look like when you look at them. So, I didn't know if like you guys had any kind of preferred penciling tools.
I use blue pencils sometimes, and I'm with Joe too on not trying to make it too tight. Otherwise, I've done things before where, I'll do a thumbnail And like, I'm like, wow, this is brilliant. And then you go to do the real thing and you're like, can't match the brilliance of the thumbnail. So
you can't match the energy and the natural.
And so it's kind of like, okay, here's, you know, here's a shape for the head and the body and whatever. And
here's where I can apologize to Todd McFarlane for making fun of his voice earlier, as if I can talk with my horrible nasally voice. He once said something I thought was really smart, is that each step you add to an illustration kind of removes about 10% of the fluidity and energy of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I find that happens sometimes. Like, the thumbnail will just be just so fluid and graceful, and sometimes I'll just have to blow it up in Photoshop and print it out in blue to work off of that, because it's just I can't match it when I try to draw it again from scratch. Yeah. But yeah, so you guys recommend working loose. What's funny is... I do have a preferred pencil. I find that I work lighter and I get a lot more energy by working with a softer lead for some reason, because it forces me to like really kind of just gently.
Yeah, you're not hammering away on the paper, getting that scratchy sound that you enjoy so much.
I save that for the ProQuil.
Yikes.
But so, okay, you turn the paper.
I turn the paper just to make you happy. Because you were really upset when Mike didn't do it. I didn't want you to be angry.
Surprised. I was surprised.
I didn't want
by
you
joy.
To be angry at me. I don't want to get beat ever. I don't know. There's some questionable things that have been said before the show and during the show, so I don't know what to expect at all.
I turn the page around a lot because I find that it takes a while for that kind of ink to dry on the page, and I don't want to smudge it that when I'm working in different parts of the
good
page.
Good point.
Especially, I find that ProQuil ink sometimes takes longer to dry because it lays it down so thick as compared to a brush. It's not laying it out in the swath. It's laying it down sort of like a trench of filling it with ink. I don't know.
If I'm looking for a certain kind of line or something, maybe then I'll turn it. But, yeah.
But most times,
usually I just kind of work as it is, yeah.
Do you find that you're getting, you know, like the black badges of courage
on
your arms?
Yeah, I love that. That's great.
That's
part of what makes it real. You know,
You know, like when I come up from the studio and I got, you know, black all over my hands, it does feel kind of macho in an artsy way.
It's like being a mechanic or something. You know, you go in and you get dirty and.
Oh man, that's so great. Oh, thank you. This one I'm auctioning.
Ooh, I don't want to keep that one.
I'll put it above my desk.
Leave this camera, I want to show you some drawings my little my granddaughter did before we left. There's a donut man.
Sweet.
With his donuts.
Yeah. Awesome.
And here's an example of letting your gesture tell the story and letting it be. There's a cookie with a lot of chips, and I wanted to. She drew Chucky. Actually, I'll show Chucky.
No, Chucky from Child's Play?
Chucky from Rugrats.
Oh.
Jersey. Once again, I'm very worried to what's going to happen after this show.
Can we get security over here?
But the best one, and never let your imagination, like, never stop your imagination. Never let that other side of the brain tell you can't do it. This is an eyeball in the sun throwing up.
That's awesome. Oh, wow.
So there you go. Lily, awesome. Thank you, Lily Jones. It's beautiful.
Woo! So are you going to do a comic with her, like X-Cop?
Well, it's possible. It's very possible.
An eyeball of the sun throwing up. That's actually a pretty awesome idea. Okay, well, you know, I want to make sure that I gave you guys ample time for final thoughts, any kind of takeaways, any appearances that you want to make, anything in particular you want to plug, make some noise about.
No.
All right.
Buy our book, please.
If you're in the
winter
Detroit
is coming
area.
Soon, and
we're very
heating
cold.
Costs are going
heating's
up,
bad.
And
especially
please here, please though. Visit apukablogspot.com.
That's where you can buy the book.
Yeah, there's a link to a shop there.
Oh, there we
there
go.
There you go. And as far as any webcomic goes, not only my webcomic, desmondscomic.com, the best thing for us is to hear comments from you guys. And for you guys to comment and to subscribe and to share. So any webcomic, not only mine, desmondscomic.com, that you find along the way, be sure to comment a lot and subscribe and let your friends know about it, because that's the way we survive as a medium.
Well, that's the currency of the internet is link sharing, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the best way to really help somebody is just to push it. Go on the Google Plus and hit that share button, or go to Twitter and say, I found this thing and it's cool. Right, yeah. So we didn't even say what Desmond's comic was about.
Yeah, let's start. Let me Let me talk about
lack of preparation
comic a little bit. It's about a Wolverine named Desmond, and he is the main character of a Pokemon style video game, unofficially Pokemon style video game. So it's the behind the scenes of making a ridiculous game like that. So I guess the overall theme of the strip is like, be careful what you wish for because you might get everything. So it's all the great things of living the life of a rock star, being a Pikachu type character. And having the adoration of fans everywhere and whatnot, but also having the adoration of fans everywhere and having to sign autographs and always being recognized and going through the process of making a video game that's kind of in the comic, if you read, it's set up a little bit like a high school play where it's pretty rinky-dink, but it looks amazing on your television screen. So it's just the behind the scenes. It's looking at something that we view every day, a video game, and kind of looking at it from the other side of the screen and seeing how it's put together and how it's made.
And his best friend's a carrot.
And his best friend is a carrot and a zombie, that actually a worm that lives inside a zombie's brain.
And it takes place in Michigan because wolverines are the state animal, even though some smarty's going to say wolverines are not native to Michigan, to which we say, that's how awesome Michigan is. We take
that's
other
right.
people's animals and make them our state animals.
That's right. We took it.
That's how we roll.
That's how we roll.
Give me that, Canada.
Yeah. Canada. America's a backpack.
Yes. All right, well, we're ready to bring in Eli. So I want to give one last shout-out to you guys. Thank you so much for this awesome demo and all the smart stuff that you threw at us. People should follow you on Twitter, Mike Roll on Twitter, right?
Yes. I think so, yes.
and JoeFoo22 on Twitter.
Numbers.
Or on the Google Pluses and on the Facebooks, too. You guys are all over all those different
Facebook,
networks.
Desmond.
We're on
has
the social media.
We do the social media thing a little bit.
Yep. So kind of. And you guys hit all of the local Michigan shows too. So if you're good, if there's a Michigan area convention, you can
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you guys
stop
there.
By, say hi to us. We do Motor City Comic Con, Fan Fair, something called Kids Read Comics.
Oh, that silly little thing.
Every so often we do that.
Yeah, you actually teach for us at those things.
Yes, we have a lot of fun there. Good stuff. Awesome. Go see that.
Yeah, thanks
around.
Again, guys. So, yes, okay, I'm going to make some noise.
He's
things.
Trying to get rid of us now.
Yeah, I'm trying to push him out. Okay, thank you. No,
I just want to say something about killer whales. Killer whales are pretty awesome most of the time.
They're killer.
Did everybody vote yesterday?
Did everyone vote? You should have.
But, okay.
We keep stalling. You have some nice toys on the table, I think.
Well, yeah, that was another thing I should tell you next time you come, because we're going to have you back. You can bring your own toys so that you feel comfortable.
All right.
You
know, well, I feel
like
I got...
security blankets.
I got like a preparation.
Starch here. Eddie's disease.
I got starch. And when I start getting self-conscious,
I'm not
say,
sure what this
yes.
is, but I got this little crossfish. Yeah,
that's a germ.
Oh, it's brain cell.
So, okay, here
we're
we
getting
go.
The, we're getting the wrap up. They're kicking us out. We're getting,
the producer has to
get the security. The security is here to ask us out. There's a hook. Thank you, Detroit. Good night.
Desmondscomic.com and microroll.blogspot.com, everybody. Let's give them a rousing digital round of applause, everybody.
Come on, guys.
In the chat.
I can't hear you.
What does that sound like, anyway?
It sounds like one hand clapping.
So, okay. And I'm going to make some noise about something that, somebody in the chat says that I'm the Leo Laporte of art. Wow, that is an incredibly kind thing to say. I hope so. That's what we're shooting for here. I was actually trying to kind of shoot for a Dick Cavett thing, but I don't think I'm as cool as Dick Cavett. But I'll work on that. I'll work on calming down when I do the show. So here we go. We've got Eli Nyberger.
How's it going?
Ann Arbor District Library. Ulotricus on the Twitters. Did I do it right that time?
Almost.
Ulotricus?
Ulotricus, but
damn.
You know, I don't... with the last name like Nyberger, I'm not picky about pronunciations. So...
with a name like Drozd, I'm not thinking about it. Drozd, da-da-da-dra. So, how's it go? What's going
on?
Good. What's exciting at ADL lately?
Well, a lot of stuff that you guys are up to has been pretty exciting. It's yeah. some really great attendance for some of the events. You know, we've got a bunch of kind of boring grown-up stuff going on. like, we just launched our old newspaper database just a couple of weeks ago. We're gearing up to do this big launch of the 40th anniversary of the John Sinclair Freedom Rally, where John Lennon and Yoko Ono performed. And so it's a lot of big, not very cool and exciting library stuff, but super awesome from a library context.
Oh, sure. Well, access to information and research are quintessential skills for a cartoonist. And when you say the newspaper archive, are you talking about the AnnArbor.com archives?
Well, no, it's not the Ann Arbor.com archives.
Or, no, Ann Arbor
it's,
News.
It's the Ann Arbor News archives,
yes. Let's be specific. That's a little bit of an inside baseball joke for Ann Arbor residents. Be careful. So, yes, the Ann Arbor News archives. You've been digitizing those.
Yes,
that must
have
been a Herculean task.
It's barely begun. Yeah, the analogy of stables full of crap is a very apt one because it's basically there will always be more crap to digitize. So,
yeah.
But a lot of it is really great stuff. And especially we have all of their photo negatives, like a million of them. And most of them have never been published anywhere going back to the 30s. So that's a huge assortment of really special and stuff that doesn't exist anywhere else. And that's where libraries need to be investing their resources.
Yeah, super, super cool. So what else?
So I brought a couple things today, particularly inky work, to pick up on today's theme.
You were so good.
Because I'm
to
prepared.
Me.
couldn't resist. So a couple different things. One, this is called, and we're going to put this here on the other camera, this is called 120 Days of Simon. This is by Simon Gardenfors. And this is a really unique work by a Swedish comic artist, and it basically he got money from the Swedish government, because the Swedish government is in support of the arts.
Yeah.
He got a grant from the Swedish government, and basically he used the grant to travel around Sweden and just make a comic journal of his trip, and many of which is liaisons with young ladies, and it's saying, please don't put me in the comic, appears in this comic about 18 times. But it's very much kind of stream of consciousness and seeing what he's doing. So he spent 120 days traveling around, basically, because he kind of had a sublet or something like that, and he had to be away from his apartment. But it's very inky and halftony stuff, but it's not immediately clear whether this is hand-done or whether it's a computer-done. I think there's a couple places where you can kind of see that it looks like it's probably handwork.
It's super clean,
but
though,
it's very graphic, has this really awesome look to it. And it's really very funny, and it kind of gives you a great image into what life is like for young Swedes, while at the same time, you can totally relate to this guy's issues. He's got bed bugs. He's freaking out about his bed bugs and all this kind of stuff. And then you're like, there's some things you totally can't relate to, like he got a grant of 40,000 euros to travel around the country and make comics or that kind of stuff.
That's a little bit alien.
Well, it wouldn't be euros, but kroners. And, so this is really cool. It's a super quick read, 120 Days of Simon by Simon Gardenfors. And that's in our graphic novel collection. It's published by Top Shelf. Then I got two other things. This is Gabrielle Bell, who she's one of those kind of confessional comic artists, but she also drifts so easily between like life stories and plausible life stories that you're never quite sure which are biographical and which aren't. Maybe they're all biographical. Maybe none of them are biographical. You can't quite tell. But she's got a really wonderful, solid style, and she does just some really great line work, and the stories are very real. And this book is called Cecil and Jordan in New York Stories. And it's basically stories about cartoonists trying to make it in New York.
Ah.
One of the things that happens is the snow emergency is lifted and they get a parking ticket on their van, which basically erodes all of the profits they had made on their entire tour up to that point. And, it's really nicely done stuff. Again, very inky, certainly hand-drawn, and nice, strong lettering. Yeah, and she just does really great work, and especially because it's a, it's from a female cartoonist perspective, but it's like, it's the same sort of stuff that anyone would do. It's a really great work and very interesting to see. She's also got a series about growing up. I forget what the title of that is, but Gabrielle Bell, highly recommended. She does some great stuff. Then, kind of like the inkiest of all inky, this is Union Station, and this is a nonfiction graphic novel. It's from
Eduardo
Oni Press.
Barreto, yeah. This guy, oh my gosh.
I mean, it's like, they don't make them like this anymore.
No.
And the style is just so evocative and so, this is a story about mobster killing in Kansas City in the late 30s, and it was basically this case was what J. Edgar Hoover used to basically build his entire power base upon. Mm. So it's a very interesting and pivotal story inside of like the mob scene in America. And you can see it's definitely hand done, and you can even see it's like hand burnished half-tone screens, you know, like the transparencies and all that stuff, because you can see where they don't quite line up some places. But it's just super gorgeous work.
Lots of cool dry brush.
Yeah, and look at the knock, knock, knock sound effects. There's just so much great stuff in here. It's a really great story. And if anything, the only problem that I had in reading it was kind of keeping each different lantern jaw straight in my mind as to, you know, who was who. But once you kind of get through that, it's a really interesting story about how this kind of unfortunate mob squabble turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to J. Edgar Hoover, and just a really great story. So that's Union Station. It's written by Andy Parks, A-N-D-E, and illustrated by Eduardo Barreto. And Andy Parks actually tells a really interesting story about talking with some of the guys who are still alive who were involved in this. And just did very carefully research and just some really great stuff. So that comes out.
People are saying in the chat, look at those blacks. Yes, his Eduardo Barreto stuff and also Jose Garcia Lopez, they kind of come from the same period and some of the same school of cartooning. They are great for squint testing. I mean, if you want to squint test to see how some blacks get anchored, look at this guy, these guys' stuff. It's amazing. There's also another one called Cinder and Ash that is by Jose Garcia Lopez, which is similar to this. But I don't know if it's in print anymore. You'd have to look in like the quarter bins at your local comic shop or convention. But yeah, this is amazing. And like how you can render folds with just like a couple quick little dashes with a brush.
Yeah.
Oh, gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, super talented. So that's all awesome stuff. But it's a really interesting conversation you guys were having because it's like, you know, as a technology guy, it's like, man, think about how much more work all you guys could do if you didn't spend so much time printing and copying and inking and drawing. And like, I understand that's the craft.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, who is it? John Allison, who has been a longtime webcomic artist. When he would dabble with Illustrator, you know, I would be like, oh my God, that's great. Just go, you know, just make your shapes. I don't care if you cut and paste the same thing, you know, a million times, but a webcomic is different, you know, and it's, but it's, again, you know, it's sort of like, as a reader, I'm always kind of like, man, I wish, you know, what else could we see if you didn't have such a laborious process to produce this stuff? And especially when you look at some of the real masters of the digital brush, how refined their work looks and how many intermediary steps they're able to cut out.
Right.
And it just seems, especially with creators having to be business people as well as creators and having to maintain their own thing, that it's like every workflow enhancement you can come up with is means how much more work will you get done during your career if you make a 10-minute workflow enhancement now.
You know, this is a really good point, too. This is something I'm struggling with personally a lot, is that I'm wrestling with, I've discovered a style that's really easy and fast for me, but it doesn't look like my old work. And so I'm trying to balance between, like, do I want to keep going with that really, the work where you can tell I put 20 hours into it and people go, oh, that's really beautiful because you put 20 hours into it. Or do I want to have more work with more stories told and just accept the fact that this looser, you know, faster style will get me there? God, that's a tough thing to fight. And then also there's the fact that we're quirky artists and, you know, we fall in love with things, right? We fall in love with, like, that touch of the paper or this particular tool. I have a pencil here that... I've been drawing comics with this particular pencil since 2002, and if anything happens to this pencil, I will just die. You know, you get weird things like that. And I really respect creators like Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com, who will be like, the best tool is whatever's nearby. He could draw with anything. It doesn't matter, right? But some of us who have, like, issues and get hung up on certain things. But anyway, thank you once again for the great books, the great picks, and you always come in with like a great like kind of rounding thought on the whole everything that we discussed. And I really appreciate that. That's a huge contribution to the show,
happy
Eli.
Life, Jersey.
So, okay, well, Eli Nyberger of AADL.org, Ulotricus on the Twitters, ulo.trico.us is your website.
ulo.trico.us. That's right. Yes, and my last post was November of 2008, so something like that. Yeah.
So there we go. But you can find him on Twitter at any rate. So thanks again, Eli.
Thank you, Jesse.
And thanks to Matt and all the guys for doing this really quick new setup for this art demo today. The folks in the chat loved it. I think the people who watch this After the Factory will love it. So thank you to the Ann Arbor District Library. The show will be live next Wednesday at 12:30 Eastern Time at comicsaregreat.tv. I've been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com. Okay, bye.